Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Talladega, Alabama, you're in the pit stop with Tim Despain and my good friend Stephen Wilson. How you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, trying to stay out of the heat and trying to stay out of the rainstorm that looks like it's about to come through.
I know it. Yeah, we're getting them little pop-up things too, Stephen, and it's definitely hot here in Talladega too. But let's go ahead and get this thing started, bud. We got a big show for y'all tonight, listeners. The call-in number is 215-383-3681, and I'm going to give a big thanks right off the bat because, you know, we do a commercial-free motorsport talk show. Big thanks to Talladega Super Speedway. Big thanks to Talladega Short Track. Big thanks to Brace Yourself, Mr. Paul Cleveland, with his new safety device. He's out of Australia. And, Stephen, if we can, let me go ahead. We'll do the prayer, and we'll do our – we'll get the invocation going, get the national anthem, and we'll start everything up, bud. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, man, sounds good.
Okay, all right. Everyone, let's bow our heads. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them that trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. And ladies and gentlemen, if y'all would remain standing, this is mine and Suzanne's good friend, Miss Donna Elkins from Talladega Super Speedway, with our national anthem. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Wilson's in the house. Stephen, can I have the floor? I know we got a lot going on tonight. I know we've got Mr. Robbie Allison, son of Davey and Liz Allison, coming on, and you've got Humpy Wheeler coming on at 7:30. Oh, I'm sorry, Robbie's coming on at 7:15 Eastern. He said he might call in a little bit early. But if I can, Stephen, can I read off a few post race facts from Dover International Speedway this past weekend? Then I'll let you have the floor. Jimmy Johnson won the FedEx 400 benefit Autism Speaks, his 68th NASCAR Sprint Cup Series victory. Prior to the start of the race, the following cars dropped to the rear. Well, wait a minute. I'll go to that later. There was nobody that failed to qualify. Time of the race was 3 hours, 23 minutes, 52 seconds. Average speed was 117.724 miles per hour. Margin of victory for Mr. Sixth Time was 0.885 seconds. There was 8 caution flags for 41 laps. It was 18 lead changes among 16 drivers, and the top 16 drivers in points after Dover. Matt Kenseth jumped ahead of Jeff Gordon. Matt's first, Jeff Gordon second, Carl Edwards third, Jimmy Johnson fourth, Dale Earnhardt Jr. fifth, Joey Logano sixth, Kyle Busch seventh, Brad Keselowski eighth, Denny Hamlin ninth, Kyle Larson tenth, Ryan Newman 11th, Kevin Harvick 12th, Brian Bickers 13th, Paul Menard 14th, Austin Dillon is 15th, and Greg Biffle was 16th. And let me jump over to one more little thing, Stephen. I'll share the floor. I'm going to read off the infraction sheet. This might take a little bit because there's a lot of infractions. Prior to the race, the 42 had to go to the tail end of the field because of change of engine. The 83 went to tail end because of change of engine. Number 44 at lap 62, outside half of the pit box. Tire violation, team member not in contact with outside tires. That was on the green. Number 47 at lap 65, pitting before pit road is open. Number 23, same lap, lap 65, pitting before pit road is open. Number 11, lap 67, speeding exiting pit road. That hurt Denny bad. Then on lap 68, 34 was speeding entering the pits. Number 55, lap 73, speed entering the pits. 18, Mr. Kyle Busch, lap 125, pitting before pit road is open. There's a bunch of them I could read down through, but I don't want to take up the time, Steve. I want to let you have the floor and whatever you want to talk about. I know they had some changes to the truck race at Eldora they announced today. But you got the floor, bud, before Robbie comes on. Go ahead, my friend.
Yeah, talking about the truck changes, I really haven't read a whole lot into it. I saw that it came through earlier. Apparently, there's some changes to the way that the heat races and the final main event feature is going to be run in Eldora. I had danger that I have to actually look it up myself. But, you know, talking about Dover this weekend, there's one story coming out of Dover. We had the track break up again. This is the third or fourth time that this has happened in the last couple of years, damaging the car. This time it happened to be Jamie McMurray's car, which hit a piece of concrete there in turn two and destroyed the front splitter as well as the grill fascia area there on the car. I know a lot of people have been talking about that, you know, NASCAR should have given him an opportunity under that red flag to repair the car because it wasn't something of his doing. And I know that if we look back, you know, what was it, last year at Charlotte where Marcus Ambrose ran across the TV line and NASCAR gave him 2 laps back under that red flag while Fox was fixing the issue out there. The biggest thing I think that we've got a problem with there is, you know, that's not something that we normally see. Granted, we've seen this before. We saw it at Daytona a couple of years ago where the track actually came up twice in the same race. We saw it several years prior to that when Jeff Gordon hit a piece of the concrete there at Martinsville, putting a hole in his radiator. So, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion on whether NASCAR should allow Jamie McMurray to work on the car during that caution flag or during the red flag period. And, you know, it's one of those judgment calls that NASCAR really had to make on that. And, you know, they have to have the discussion on whether that, you know, whether, you know, they have to look at these incidents and they have to formulate a plan that if they know that this is something that caused by the on-track racing, that something like this with, like we saw with Marcus Ambrose being allowed to get 2 laps back there at Charlotte, you know, Jamie and their team, in my opinion, I think they should have been able to work on the car, but to make it fair to everybody, if you would allow Jamie to work on his car, they would have to have allowed everybody else to work on their car. So it's a catch-22 deal on whether they actually can or cannot let them do it. I think it would have just had to be in a judgment call, and for the time being, I think, like I said, NASCAR needs to come up with some formulated plan on how they're going to approach this in the future when they see something like this happens that is obviously not the driver's fault, not another competitor's fault, but an act of, I guess we could consider that nature, is that just has nothing to do with the racing on track action at all.
Yeah, I will agree, Stephen. And you know what your rule book states. You read it. I have too. And you know, Suzanne's brought it up, and I've had a lot of my NASCAR friends here in town talk about it. They said, you know, the same thing you did. Why didn't they let him do it? I said, well, it's the way the rule book states. And, you know, NASCAR might need to look in, you know, to maybe, you know, just like you said, if it's not caused by, I don't know how you would say it, but if it was just not common, you know, that they would give him that chance to work on the car. Because I do agree, Stephen. I mean, you know, it was not of Jamie Mack Stevens. It was not of any of the 43 cars on the track. It was that piece of concrete at Dover that come up and got him.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're just going to have to take a look at that in the rule book and actually come out with something that is going to benefit everybody, not only NASCAR, but, you know, the teams themselves. Because Jamie and them, they were in no fault of their own in this incident. Neither did any other competitor out there cause this to happen. This is just a act of nature, I guess you could consider this. And it happened. And NASCAR, hopefully, in looking at this incident and looking at incidents over the past several years with the track coming apart and things of that nature, that they may allow these teams, under a very limited supervision and very limited scope of work on what they can and can't fix during those red flag cautions. But then again, like I said, you know, it's a catch-22 deal. If you're going to let that team work on their car under red flag because it happened on the track, what's to stop another team from going out there and asking NASCAR, can I work on it? And it would be up to NASCAR to have to figure out, and I think there's a lot of comes into play right there, is can NASCAR make the determination if somebody else says, hey, well, you know, I ran over it too, can I fix my car? And I think it has to be an obvious, you know, with Jamie McMurray, he obviously hit it. He was the only one that hit it, caused the damage to that car. And I think with NASCAR, I don't think they have the time to go there and look at every single thing. But some could be done. What that is, I don't know, but as the rule book right now, it currently states under red flags, you cannot work on a car no matter what, no matter what happens. And, you know, like I said, last year at Charlotte, where NASCAR did determine that because of the faulty cable that caused Marcus Ambrose to go down those multiple laps, through no fault of his own, he was allowed to get those laps back under that red flag and be back on the lead lap as he was when the cable broke.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that you said, Stephen. Yeah, I mean, you know, just like you said, if it was me and you out there, you know, if you hit the concrete, then I'd say, well, a piece of that concrete come up and got my windshield, you know, and then, you know, what are you going to do? You can't, you know, it's, like you said, it's sort of like a double-edged sword, and I want to applaud NASCAR for everything that they do to try to make it equal and everything, and stuff just going to pop up, Stephen. You know, stuff is going to pop up. But, Stephen, I've got my good friend Todd Bigsby on here from upstate New York, and I want to bring him on right quick before Robbie comes on. We're going to bring Todd in the pit stop with Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson. Todd, how you doing, my friend? You want to get a quick shout-out to anybody or a quick question to Stephen? We got a few minutes before Mr. Robbie comes on. If you want to comment on anything or whatever, you got the floor, bud.
Well, I got to say, I agree with the both of you, you know, on that aspect as far as what had happened to poor Jamie. When it comes to something like that, where it's just Jamie that hit it, I think he should be allowed to work on this car, considering it was kind of, like Steven said, act of nature. So I really believe that, you know, they need to look into that and kind of change that, considering it was really nobody's fault but the track giving way.
Go ahead, Stu.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, they could have done something, but I think the problem just in lies that, you know, if they were the only ones out there and they obviously hit it, you know, Tim made the comment where, you know, anybody could go out there in that field and say, well, a piece of it hit this or hit that or damaged this or broke a spindle or did something to the underbody of my car. And NASCAR just doesn't have it's not that they don't have the staff at the track, but the problem is they just don't have the time to go out there and analyze and look at everybody's car and make that judgment call. You're not going to please everybody, and no matter how you do it. I know Jamie's team was kind of, they were fighting NASCAR, telling them that they, asking them could they work on the car. They were obviously in some discussions as to what could be done, if anything could be done. But, you know, ultimately NASCAR said, no, you know, we're not going to allow you to work on the car under this red flag caution. And you know, there was only 22 minutes that that caution lasted for anyway. So how much time does NASCAR really have to go out there and look at everybody's car that's raising a red flag and say, well, I got damaged too?
Oh, yeah, I agree with you there.
Yeah, I do too. And Todd, I want to thank you again for being a good friend and supporting myself and Steven and this venture that we're trying to go on. And thanks again, bud. And if you want to hold on and listen, you're welcome too. And I think we've got Mr. Robbie coming on here in just a second. I see Suzanne playing with some buttons. But Todd, thanks again for being such a good friend and calling into our show and supporting us. And I'm going to put you in the mute, Todd, if that's okay.
That's fine.
All right. Thanks, bud. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got Mr. Robbie Allison. I got this text from his mother yesterday, Miss Liz. I said, Liz, you're going to give me some info on this kid. I can't find that much on Google. But Robbie's racing the number 12 State Water Heaters Allison Legacy car for the full season. Had his first Legacy race last week at Orange County, finished sixth. Also running in the GoPro Pro Kart series, attended college until last year, so I'm assuming he graduated. Moved to Mooresville in January from Nashville, running late models in the fall. He's grassroots racing right now. His development coach is Mr. Lauren Rainier, one of our good friends, Mr. Harry Lanier's son. At this time, ladies and gentlemen, we want to bring on Mr. Robbie Allison, son of Davey and Liz Allison.
Can you hear me, Tim?
Yeah, I got you, Robbie. How you doing tonight, my friend? Welcome to the Pit Stop with Tim Spain and Steven Wilson. How you doing, bud?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Tim.
Oh, thank you very much, Robbie. And I want to thank your mother and everything for, you know, everything she's done. And I want to thank your dad, Mr. Davey. I've got to meet him, you know, back in the day, and I want to thank him for everything he's done for the sport of NASCAR. And my good friend Steven Wilson, he's a lot better at all these questions and stuff, and, you know, me and you talked about what you might want to talk about. But, Robbie, if you want to talk about yourself right now, what you've got going on, I know you got something big going on, you know, being a third-generation Allison driver, but you got the floor, my friend.
All right, well, thank you. You covered it pretty well yourself. You know, right now I've been here for a few months in Mooresville, North Carolina, which is, you know, Race City. And, I mean, I just really thankful God's blessed me with a lot of really great people to surround me with and, you know, kind of teach me what to do and where to go. I finished college in the spring of last year, and, you know, I just kind of was talking to some people, some family friends and family, and, you know, a church leader of mine back in Nashville, Tennessee, and, you know, just really felt a calling from God to re-pursue my racing career and, you know, to do it for the right reasons and to just, you know, go at it with everything I have. So that's, you know, that's kind of what I'm doing right now. And of course, you know, we're getting a little bit of a late start. So Lauren Rainier, like you said, the son of Harry Rainier, who is actually my dad's first Cup car owner and kind of the origins of the number 28. He reached out to me and, you know, has been just an awesome support and help as far as, you know, kind of putting me into the right seat and just teaching me what to do and how to wheel the car. You know, so right now we got to get a lot of experience in a little bit of time, and so we're running a bunch of stuff at once. You know, I mean, I've been doing a lot of Legends races with Mark Green, you know, who's done some racing himself, and I've been working in this place called GoPro Motorplex, which is starting to become pretty famous around town, and, you know, we're doing a lot of professional karting with that, which is a blast. But what I'm really excited about right now is I'm actually working with my own family in the Allison Legacy Series, and that's kind of, you know, our last stepping stone towards getting into a super late model, which we plan to run the past super late model series, which tours throughout the Southeast in the fall, and then also through part of next year as we kind of move along my path. You know, like you said, I had my first official race in the Legacy car last weekend, and finished sixth, which was, you know, I mean, it was a blast, great learning experience. According to them, it was a good finish for my first race, but of course I wanted to finish higher, being a competitive Allison and everything, but it's a lot of fun, you know. My granddad, Bobby, and of course my great uncle, Donnie, they're hilarious. It's great to spend time with them and to kind of see what kind of pointers they can give me, and also to see their interactions with each other. I get some priceless bits from them. But, you know, I mean, I'm just, it's like every day is a new adventure right now, and really grateful for it. It's been a blast. So that's what I'm working on right now.
That sounds good, Robbie. And, yeah, you know, you from the Allison family, one of the best Alabama gang, you know, and with Bobby and Donnie, and I mean, you know, you've got Lauren, I mean, you've got all kind of help, and I want to wish you the best of luck, Robbie, and I want to hand you over to my other host, Mr. Stephen Wilson. He's CEO of Speedway Digest out of Martinsville, Virginia. Stephen, you've got the floor with Mr. Robbie Allison.
Hey, Robbie, I just want to start off with this question here. With you coming from the Allison family, we always hear about the others that always come through. You hear about the Jareds, you hear about the Earnhardts, and you hear about as their kids grow up. And obviously you're now in that position where you've come through and you have the Allison name. How does that help or hurt your perception to other people in the racing community and the people that you're racing weekly out there on the track with?
That's a great question, Stephen. It's a mixed bag for sure. You know, I'm grateful to be a part of such an iconic family. And, you know, I mean, I can sit with my grandfather and talk to him about his incredible career. And, you know, I mean, of course, to me, he's my adorable grandfather, but I hear him tell these stories and it's almost surreal to me to think that he accomplished so much in one lifetime. And, you know, I mean, that really has become such a fuel to my own fire. And, you know, obviously being in a situation where I was not really able to know my own father, it's very cool to me that he was such a great racer and such a great man that people continue to remember him almost 21 years after his passing. And that gives me kind of some sort of sense of feeling like I know who he is. And, you know, of course there's that missing piece, but I mean, that's just another, you know, kindred spirit that has kind of surrounded me and really fueled my competitive fire. As far as the people around me in Mooresville, I guess the pros to having the last name so far, it seems, is that everybody wants to help. I mean, it doesn't matter if, you know, these are people that are top drivers and crew chiefs in Sprint Cup Series, or if these are, you know, people from grassroots racing around town. Everybody is interested in helping me, and they know that I have a lot of work to do, and they just want to be there as a support. And I'm so grateful for that. I mean, it's huge, and it's brought me a very long way in a very short amount of time. But of course, you know, the other side of the spectrum is that I do have the last name. I am getting a bit of a late start, and so there's certainly quite a bit of pressure that somebody else in my shoes might not have to deal with. And, you know, it's not for me to say if, you know, that makes my situation any harder or not, because it's only my situation. But, you know, one thing that my mother and my grandparents and a lot of other people who are close to my family have done a great job of teaching me is that my father faced that same pressure. You know, he had a slow start. You know, he had a lot of difficulties coming up through the ranks and trying to make it to the top level of NASCAR. And people weren't always accepting of that, you know, but he was so determined and he was so dead set on being the best that he could be that he didn't listen to any of it, you know. He would take what he liked and he would leave the rest. And I feel like, you know, it's my responsibility to do the very same. Of course, there are people out there that don't agree with what I'm doing. And there are people who want to put some extra pressure on me, but all I can do is the best that I can do. And that's what I'm working on. You know, every day I try to do the best I can do to further my goals in racing. And I mean, so far it seems to be working out pretty well.
And you kind of just touched on it there kind of quickly about you getting a late start in the racing world. You know, a lot of these drivers that are out there these days coming up to the ranks, they start in quarter midgets go-karts when they're very, very young. And as you said, you know, you started a little bit later in that. How do you see your path through the next couple of years progressing out? And what is your ultimate goal as far as what you feel is realistic in the next couple of years to get in a seat and compete full-time?
I did get a late start, and there's a lot of pieces to that, mainly being that I really felt in my heart that as much as I've always loved racing and I've always wanted to do it, I had to, you know, in a healthy way, grieve the loss of my father before I'd feel comfortable really pursuing this career. And, you know, I was able to do that with the help of my family and God, and so here I am. But as far as the future, you know, we're doing a lot in a little amount of time. And which is a lot of fun, first of all. But, you know, I guess right now we're kind of trying to take it a season at a time. But if I were to lay out like a year-by-year plan, you know, I know next year, our goal at this point is next year to run the past Super Late Model Series for maybe a full season, maybe half a season, the end of the 2015 season to be shooting for a seat in a K&E Series ride. And, you know, it looks pretty good at this point that we'll be able to do that, which I'm very excited about. You know, and of course from there, we'd probably compete in a full season for 2016 in the K&N East and try to do what we can as far as climbing into, you know, a truck or an ARCA car, anything we can do to keep furthering the career that I have laid in front of me. And, you know, at this point, the way that Lauren Rainier has kind of put it is, you know, my dad was 28 when he was a rookie at the time, Winston Cup. And it will probably be looking at about the same for me, you know, 28, 29 years old.
And just looking at some of the tracks that you will potentially be going to, I know you don't have as much experience out there on some of the short tracks or even ARCA, but where do you feel that you fit in on some of these tracks out there as to what is your strength at a certain track, or what is a track out there that you don't feel right now that you're going to be as comfortable riding around in or driving at until you get some more seat time at?
One thing that I've noticed for myself and kind of my preference with racing is that I love being just, you know, elbows up on the wheel, you know, speed is awesome. I mean, it's just, it's a huge rush. It's so much fun. And I've been lucky to be able, in both Legends and Legacy cars, to go to some of these, you know, super high bank short tracks that basically look like mini Bristols and just zoom around the track. I mean, you know, whether it's somewhere like Orange County or Hickory in North Carolina, or we'll be at the Motor Mile in Langley, Virginia this coming weekend. You know, I mean, these are tracks where, I mean, you're just zipping around there, and, you know, brakes are very minimal, and I don't want to necessarily say that it's my forte, but it's definitely a lot of fun. You know, I've really enjoyed getting a lot of road course experience. I know that's something that my grandfather was absolutely prolific in, and, you know, made a lot of his name and his fortune through that. And it's been a blast for me, you know, so I'll be looking forward to going to a few road courses this year with the Legacy car. But I mean, you know, the way that it's kind of been taught to me is there's no such thing as a bad track. You know, either you drive it well or you don't. And if you don't, then it's up to you to keep improving, you know, whether it's a lot at a time or a little bit at a time, to always improve and see how you could be a little bit better. So there's nowhere necessarily that I don't like, but there are certainly faster tracks that I have a lot more fun at.
All right, well, Robbie, I appreciate you coming on the show tonight, and good luck as you progress throughout your career and seeking through the motorsports world.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It was a blast.
Okay. 10-4, Robbie. And right before you have to go, I want to touch on something that you talked about your dad, you know, talking about, you know, you had to get over the time and everything, but son, I want to tell you one thing. I met your dad a couple of times, and he would excuse my language, people. He would be damn proud of what you're doing, my friend.
Thank you very much. It never gets old to hear that.
You're welcome. Tell me, I've got a story that I could tell about your granddad, Mr. Bobby, but I can't tell it on the radio. I might see you at the induction thing back here in October, and I'll give you a little taste of that.
Absolutely. I'll be there, and I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks again, bud. And don't be a stranger. Whenever you want to come back on, just hit me or Steven up. We'll get you back on. We're going to try to get your mother on, Liz. I know she's got a busy schedule and everything. But, yeah, she agreed that she'd come on. We just, like me and Steven said, we've got, there's so much going on. Everything's blowing up. But just let us know, Robbie, whenever you want to come back on, and you're very welcome, bud.
Absolutely. I'd love to. Thanks a lot, Tim.
All right, thank you, bud. Y'all have a good evening.
All right, you too.
All right, thanks, bud. All right, Stephen, that was Mr. Robbie Allison. He seems like he's matured pretty quick. You know what he said? He had a late start, but that's one matured up young fellow too, ain't he?
Yeah, he is. You know, a lot of these drivers, as I was trying to touch on, that you'll see them out there running quarter midgets and go-karts at very early ages, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old out there, you know, winning some of their first championships before they're even 10 years old in the go-karts, quarter midgets, and things of that nature. And so, obviously, he's had a late start in this, but I don't think in his situation it's going to be as necessarily too much of a hill to overcome as some of the other drivers out there. And I say that only because of the fact that he has a lot of people around him that can help him and go through the ranks that and give him the guidance that he needs to be given, where some of these other drivers that come in late don't have that and don't have the support system behind them to overcome some of the molehills that they will encounter throughout their racing career.
Yeah, I will agree. And, you know, that's just like, you know, you take Robbie. Well, let's throw Chase Elliott in there. You know, you take Chase Elliott, then you got Robbie Allison. And I was thinking somebody, Brandon McReynolds. You know, we've had Larry Mack on. And, you know, Brandon's got a good background, but he can't get the sponsorship either. I mean, you know, you take Brandon McReynolds, and I'm sure we're going to have Humpy come on here after a while, and Humpy's going to talk about that. What's that he always says to him, that dirt road country boy out in the cornfields of Iowa? But, you know, you take Robbie Allison, you take Chase Elliott. Chase Elliott, I'm not going to say he got lucky, but, I mean, Chase hit everything just right. Then you've got Robbie Allison, and then you've got Brandon McReynolds. And I've talked with Larry Mack a couple of times, and he said, Tim, it's the funding. The funding is just tough to come by. And I guess it's going to, you know, it's going to take that being at the right place at the right time. Am I correct, Steven?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to take you being there at the right time in order to get some of these things. But, you know, sponsorship is just so hard to come by these days, no matter who you are. And a lot of it is not only about who you are, but it's how you can sell that brand out there to some of these sponsors. And they're not always necessarily looking for the next great Jimmy Johnson that can drive a car. They're looking for somebody that can promote their brand and be the face of their brand out there week in and week out and at these sponsorship
relationships that these drivers have to go through these days.
Yeah, exactly right, Stephen. And we've got Humpy Wheeler. Humpy's one of the former president of Charlotte Motor Speedway. I've met Humpy here at the induction ceremonies, and I want to bring Humpy on. And Humpy, I know he's going to talk about that. What we're talking about, the dirt road country boy in the cornfields of Iowa. And but let's give Mr. Humpy Wheeler, one of the best promoters ever for our sport in NASCAR. Let's give him a big shout.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Hey, Humpy, you're in the pit stop with Tennessee Spain and Stephen Wilson live from Talladega, Alabama. How you doing tonight, my friend?
Well, that's good. That introduction you gave me is good because, you know, I've boxed for 8 years, and I'm glad I'm not doing that anymore because that's the tough end of the business. Oh, Lord.
That's right, Humpy. And you just missed Robbie Allison. I was wanting to try to keep him on, but I don't know what all he had going on. You know, Davey's son, Robbie. Robbie just got off there. I would like to have him on with you. Maybe we can get y'all back.
Well,
again,
I wish you'd get him back on. I wish you got him back on because I was with I was with Bobby at lunch. Bobby Allison and I at lunch today, and I brought him back. He and Larry McReynolds, a gift that Robbie probably hadn't heard about yet. But anyway, I'm sorry I missed him.
That's okay. And, Humpy, I'll tell you what, I'll hand you over to my sidekick, Mr. Stephen Wilson, CEO of Speedway Digest out of Martinville, and I'll see if I'm going to put myself on mute, and I'll see if I can get Robbie to call back in.
Oh, that'd be Stephen, great, because I want to tell him something.
Okay, I'll see if I can get him. Y'all have at it.
All right, great. All right.
Hey, Humpy, I just want to start off real quick here. You've started the Speedway Benefits out here to kind of pull some of the resources of the tracks out there to help them promote the weekly series, not only on asphalt but on dirt. What do you see that is accomplishing here in the next couple of years?
Well, I think what it's doing is we're able to save them a lot of money. For one thing, whether you're in Ace the Boga or down at Talladega Short Track or you're out at Skagit Speedway in State of Washington, you all buy the same thing. And what we do is we go into Scott Paper Company, for instance, and we say we want 300,000 rolls of toilet paper instead of 300. And then we can get the price down quite a bit. And then we also go to, you know, the soft drink companies or whoever and say, hey, look, we can deliver you, you know, 1,000 short tracks across the country, and you can buy them from us, and then we'll divvy the money out to the short tracks. So it's something they never had before, and it's working very well how we're doing it because, you know, I've always been a short track guy. I started off my career in racing on short tracks. I started driving, then I started promoting, and I've always had that love, and despite the fact that, you know, I spent 35 years running Charlotte Motor Speedway and Speedway Motorsports, which own Bristol and Sonoma and Atlanta and all kind of other racetracks. My heart's always been in the short tracks. I just love it, and I grew up with it, and I'm going back to it.
And earlier, I think it was about the middle part of last year, you became very active on the social media, putting some YouTube videos out about the current state of racing as a whole. And a lot of people out there were kind of wondering, what was your next step out there? What were you going to do next? Can you kind of talk a little bit on how this idea came about and where you see that could be helped, not only with the tracks, but even in NASCAR and ARCA and ASA and some of the other series that run weekly out there?
Well, I think the main reason I did that is because, you know, I made a substantial amount of money in racing, and I'm not afraid to admit that. I worked hard for it, just like a lot of people out there have worked hard to make a living. And I thought it's time to give some back. And part of giving back is to speak frankly, brutally sometimes, and honestly about the state of the sport and what needs to be done and to correct the some of the things that I see are grossly wrong with it. And no matter what anybody says, how they can come back to me or anything else, I don't care at this point. I just want to see the right thing done because I've been in this all my whole life, and I've never really done anything else except race. And I think I know where the problems lie, and I think I know how to correct them. And so that's kind of what I'm giving back right now, and I think it's something that is needed because a lot of people just won't straighten up and say, this is the way it is, folks, and if you don't like it, that's just too bad. And that's kind of what I've been doing.
Well, obviously this year NASCAR has gone in there and they're changing some of the things in the sport. A lot of things that the fans have complained about over the years, not only with the cars to tighten up the racing, but they've even tweaked the chase format and things of that nature. They've been talking about engine rules and things to reduce the horsepower in these cars to give a closer, tighter racing. And this year we've seen more passes this year on average per race than any other in previous years. Do you think that is something that, because of not only you but others that are influential in the sport, has helped kind of culminate and bring this to the NASCAR series and the other series as a whole?
I think it has, because I don't want to brag, but the fact that the green, white, yellow finish was my idea. The double file restarts was my idea. The current qualifying deal was my idea, and because I felt like that we owed that to the race fan. I began to see that we were losing fans, and I began to see the fact that around 2008 that we needed to do something drastic to get them back, and these are some of the ideas I came back with. I put them in very explicitly to Brian France, Mike Helton, Robin Pemberton, the rest of the folks that that run NASCAR, as well as the people in NASCAR town, because, you know, we have two different deals here. We have NASCAR, the organization, which everybody tends to blame on everything, and they shouldn't, and NASCAR town, which is kind of a small town of about 5,000 people that go from race to race to race, and they're made up of the drivers, the crews, the owners, the sponsors, the officials, advertisers, etc. And so it's the NASCAR town that's probably got us in more trouble than it has NASCAR. NASCAR is trying to get us out of the trouble now that we've gotten into. And the reason why we think we've got so many empty seats today is very, very, very simple. I saw it coming. I saw it as I got ready to leave Charlotte Motor Speedway about 5 years ago. We had a number of new people come into NASCAR. People had no conception of what it was like in the old days. They had no conception of Daytona back in '59. They had no conception of the old Birmingham Speedway back in the '60s and '70s, where the Alabama gang reigned. They had no conception of the old Northern Tour. We went up to Long Island, Islip, New York, Trenton, New Jersey, et cetera. They tried to fancy things up too much, much like a lot of people in Nashville tried to fancy what we used to call hillbilly music up, and, you know, they called it country and western. Okay, that's all right, but they changed the music and got them in bad trouble. Same thing happened with us in stock car racing. Got too fancy. I'll give you a perfect example. I had a guy call me one day. He was a big sponsor. It wasn't our sponsor, but he was a NASCAR sponsor, and I respect them. He said, Humpy, he said, look, you know, we need to do something about this national anthem. He said, it's gotten too. You need to raise it up another four or five notches. You need to get Maria Callas and Luciano Pavarotti and et cetera, Pavarotti to come in and sing it. When I've already gotten to Pavarotti, I'd probably done it, but I couldn't because I like him. But anyway, first thing I did when I got off the phone is I called George Jones's agent, and I said, look, I'd like to get George down and sing the national anthem. And George has been has played for me over the years and various sundry things I've done, you know, 5 or 6 times. George shows up. I said, George, have you got any twang left in you? Now, George is 75 at this point. He died this past year at 80. He said, Humpy, that's all I got is twang. I said, I want you to really do that on the national anthem. And he did. And he didn't change the notes. He didn't change the music. He just put the twang in. And the people went crazy. We still have those people in the grandstand. They haven't changed, despite the fact that so many people that have come into NASCAR town have tried to change what we're doing to try to make it fancier, better, et cetera. And it took it away from its roots. I think today, I go back too doggone far, I guess. I remember Junior Johnson when he got out of prison for moonshining. And he went down, and Bill France didn't want a thing to senior, didn't want a thing to do with him because he thought it looked bad for the sport. He ends up winning the Daytona 500 in 1960. I remember so much of that where we weren't, you know, we didn't quite have the right people, the right whatever it was, according to some people in the sport. And so, you know, I took that aback. I was, that's crazy. I remember Dale Earnhardt when he first got into it. I was the guy that got him his first decent ride with Rod Osterman. Stringy hair, didn't talk right, didn't act right, wore the wrong clothes, his teeth weren't right, etc. But he was just one hell of a race driver. Nobody could drive it down the corner any deeper than him. He or Junior Johnson couldn't get a ride today if their life had depended on it. I asked AJ Foyt up in Annapolis 2 years ago, and AJ's a dear friend of mine. I've known him forever. I said, AJ, if you were, you know, 20 years old again, what would you do today? He said, well, I wouldn't get a ride. He says, my God. He says, I didn't talk right. I didn't act right. I wouldn't put up with these sponsors. I would just, you know, I said it like it was. I said, I remember that very well. And because I was with Firestone when he won the race in Goodyear, he won Firestones, and he had a Goodyear racing uniform on. I'm trying to put a Firestone cap on him at the 1964 Indy 500. He says, well, he says, just too bad because, you know, my dad Tony, who I knew well, he couldn't put me in these kind of cars, and he said I'd still be racing in some sagebrush town down in Texas, and never would have amounted to a damn thing. And unfortunately, that's where we've gotten right now, and it is really too bad because an awful lot of our racers today are rich kids or kids that have got a way in that other people don't. And that's a bad thing. Because I used to sit up there at Charlotte when the 600 would start. And I looked down there at 43 cars getting ready to start the race. And I think, these 175,000 people have paid a huge amount of money to see this thing. Have we got the right people driving those cars? And if we don't, we're not going to give them the best show. Well, I thought for a long time we did, and then I began to wonder a little bit. And I said, have we left a lot of great racers out? Have we left them down there at the Talladega short track where they can't get out of that dirt atmosphere? Have we left them in the cornfields of Iowa? Have we left them in the sagebrush of Texas? Because they didn't have the money or the connections to move up. And I thought to myself, my gosh, if we have done a tremendous injustice to this sport. And I think today we have left a lot of great race drivers where they'll never get out of where they are. And that's very unfortunate.
And just one real quick last question for you is, you know, obviously you've touched on some of this, and a lot of what some of these track owners and these promoters do these days are gimmicks to get the fans to come in. And some of that is, you know, what is needed to bring these fans in. But as a wholesale, what do you see that some of these track promoters and track owners can do to change the tide and change the perception of what a NASCAR race is and bring them in to the events to get them to buy the tickets outside of not only their racetrack? What is something you think they could do to change those perceptions?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is, you know, more promoters like Grant Lynch at Talladega, who knows what the race fan wants. Grant's been around. He's from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He understands what the working man wants. And the working man's who's in the grandstand. It's not the doctors and lawyers that are sitting in the grandstand. It's the working people. And they used to wear coveralls. Now they wear T-shirts. That's fine. The greatest people in the world. I grew up with them. I still am one. If you want to call me a redneck, that's exactly what I am, and I'm proud of it. I think that these track operators need to look at that real hard and say, okay, the first thing we do is we'll cut ticket price drastically, maybe as much as 50%. Second thing we're going to do is we're going to try to do everything we can to keep the hotels and motels in the area down to a reasonable rate for these good race fans that have gotten us where that we want to go. And the next thing we need to do, and the most important thing we need to do, is give them the show of their life. When they drop that flag, what happens in front of them has got to be the greatest entertainment they've ever seen. Now, if that means it's a 600-mile race at Charlotte, and it's too long, I promoted 34 of them, and I promoted 24 straight sellouts of 170,000 people and up, I will say this. Maybe it's time to change, and I haven't said this before, ever. Maybe it's time to change and not have 600 straight miles of racing. Maybe it's time to say, hey, let's look at what's working in the world, and that is the short dirt tracks of America are doing pretty darn well. They don't run 600-mile races. Maybe what we need to do is bring the boys in. And on Sunday, you get to the track, still have the, you know, start at 6 o'clock, whatever, and you run heat races. You qualify for a 200-mile main events. And you take, and instead of taking the guy that is the most, the guy that wins every one of them, you don't do that. I'm not saying that, but you take those three 200-mile races and you make them short, and whoever does the best in those 200-mile races, they're the winner. They get the money. So if a guy goes out in the first 200 miles, at least he's got some money to cough up. You know, he can get back to and do pretty well. But you don't run them 600 straight miles. Now, a lot of other people probably got ideas of how to do that better than what I did. But you may just say, okay, you're going to call it the 600, maybe it's 600 kilometers, which is 420 miles. So you run three races there. That's 100-some miles apiece. You got great racing action for a whole evening, and that's all people want. Just give us the evening. We don't want it to be the 24 hours of Charlotte or Daytona or whatever it is. We want it to just be about a 3 hours of entertainment. And right now what we got with a 500-mile race or even a 600-mile race at the intermediate tracks, in particular a mile and a half, 2 miles, is you got to start, which is fun, and then it just gets real dull for about two-thirds of the deal, and then you get toward the end and things get, you know, people get speed up again, and then you have a race toward the end. But you don't have any entertainment in the middle part. The middle part is just round and round, go around, drone, et cetera. Talladega is a good example of that. Stay there, they don't move for about 100 miles to about 450, then they make their move. What we want to do is make them, we want to see cars moving all day long, whether it's at Talladega, Charlotte, Dover. Dover is an example. Dover just went, it was very dull until the last part of the race. And then it kind of cranked up a little bit. And then Jimmy Johnson won. But that's what we got to get to. We have to entertain the American public. That's what racing's all about. It's the entertainment business. And whatever it takes to do that, and whatever changes we need to make, we need to do that. You know, we're in the entertainment business, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, period. Oh, yeah, sports, seventh. But at that standpoint, we need to put the emphasis on the guys running up front. And that's one thing I like about what NASCAR's done, and with the chase, you win or you lose. You can't win the chase without winning races. And you can't have a guy sit back there and say, man, I finished third today. That was great. I moved up into points. He hadn't won a race all year, and he says that. You know, I can remember the day when Smokey Unick and Bud Moore and old-time mechanics would just cleave a guy's head off if he said that. The only thing they cared about was bring me back the steering wheel or the trophy. I don't care about anything else.
Yeah, and we've got Riley Allison back on the phone for you here. He just called back in a second ago.
Hey, Robbie, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you doing?
Me and Humpy.
Well, listen, you won't believe what happened today. Folks, I got to tell you this because nobody else knows this. So it's first time on your show. I'm sitting there today at lunch with Bobby Allison. And you know him pretty well, don't you, Robbie?
I think I do.
All right. And Larry McReynolds. And I brought them back. I saved it for the right time. I brought them back the bowl that you and your cousin were baptized in my office at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Now, I had to give it to Larry, so he and Linda have it. And your granddad saw it, but I know you're living with him. And so I do want to tell your mother that, because let me tell you the story about that. You may not know that, and folks would be like to hear this. Davey, your daddy, calls me up, and he says, look, he says, Humpy, you know, it's race week and all that. And he says, I got to baptize Robbie. I said, well, that's great. And, of course, we're all Catholic. Okay. As is Larry. And he says, let me get Liz to call you. So Liz calls me and says, well, could we do it in your office? I said, sure. We do everything at the Speedway. We have funerals, baptisms, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's wherever God wants to be. He can invade our privacy because that's where the people are. So at any rate, here it comes. It's race weekend of the 600 or 500. I can't even remember which race it was. But at any rate, I know it's on Thursday. And here they come up the elevator. And we got Father Dale Gruba, who's a wonderful priest. I don't think you've met him yet. But Bobby Allison sure knows him well because he's a great friend of both of ours. And Larry knows him well. I said, Father Gruba, we'll do the baptism. Yeah, he's looking forward to that. So here, your mother brings you into my office, and Brandon's mother brings him into my office with your dad in tow and with Larry in tow. And your mother's mad as a dickens at your dad because he didn't wear a coat and tie. he had his driver's uniform on. And I said, well, Daddy, come on in the bathroom. I had a bathroom there. I said, we'll get you all straightened up this baptism. So we went in there, and he said, what have you got I can wear? He said, everything. You guys too big for me. I said, well, no, wait a minute. No, see, I got a golf shirt here. Now, I had this really nice golf shirt. I mean, it was like cotton eye, you know, really nice. And he put it on. And your dad was so sensitive to any kind of cloth. It was unbelievable. His skin was that sensitive. And he said, this is itchy. This is so itchy. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, I can't get anything less itchy than this. I said, this is the softest thing. He said, well, you can throw it in the washing machine. I said, my God, they're not going to wait for you out there for 24 hours while it dries out. So, at any rate, I found another shirt, and he said, well, you know, that might work. So he put that on. He thought that was a little scratchy, but he said, is your skin scratchy? Robbie?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yeah. I said, Robbie, are you there?
I think I'm here. I lost service for a second. I'm sorry.
Okay, there with us now.
I'm here.
Okay. Any rate, we finally got your dad squared away and got the right shirt on him that your mother approved. And so we had the baptism. So anyway, that bowl that we had the baptism in, this is, see, how old are you now?
22.
Okay, 22 years later, I deliver that bowl today, okay, to Larry McReynolds and your grandfather.
Wow.
So congratulations on your baptism bowl.
Well, that's awesome.
And,
actually,
you know what? You know what your granddad said. I don't think you'll fit in that now.
I'm a little bit bigger. That's right. It's
funny that you say that
because there's a picture on my Twitter page that Brandon and I posted the other day of us getting baptized that very day. And if you look at my dad in the picture, he looks like he's in a little bit of trouble. So now it all makes sense.
Oh, he was in big trouble that day. He was in big trouble that day. So I finally
Well, now
said,
I understand
listen.
Why.
You know, I said, you guys go down to Speedway Club, you have dinner on me, and go from there. But your mom was so damn mad at him, she couldn't see straight. But I said, Liz, just calm down a little bit, for God's sake. Man's been out there in the hot deal. He's been in a race car. He's, you know, running 3 inches from the wall, going almost 200 miles an hour. Just have a little patience. I said, I have no patience for that. So anyway,
hey, she still
I thought that was great. No, she still doesn't. And but you got a great mom. You had a great father. Gee, you know, your dad, I used to talk to him all the time about what was good and what was bad, what he needed to do, what he didn't need to do. Because, you know, he can only listen to his own father so much. And then he'd say, oh, he's a pain in the butt. I said, well, you and I need to talk about this deal. Let's sit down and talk about it. And we sit down and we talk about whatever life was, you know, in front of him and everything else. But I still say today, the greatest race that has ever happened in NASCAR history was the 1992 All-Star Race at Charlotte, the first race under the light. When on the last lap, your dad, Kyle Petty, and Dale Earnhardt Sr. were coming off the second turn, and they were going down the backstretch, my daughter Patty was producing the race for the old Tennessee, the old Nashville Network, and they went in the third turn, and Kyle booted Earnhardt right up in the wall. Your dad, in a classic move, ducked right down below him. Your dad was so good at taking advantage when he saw another opening. And, of course, they crashed all the way down the front right away. And they ended up there. And it was the first time in the history, and I hope it's the last time, that the winner, your dad, could not make it to the winner's circle because he was not cuckoo. And, of course, at the time, there was a lot of bad stuff going on in racing then, as you know. And, you know, Earnhardt had been killed, and we had the Adam Petty. Well, he had not been killed yet. No, that was much later. But we just had a lot of bad stuff going on. But anyway, and Bobby Allison was just recovering from all that. Horrible
right.
wreck at Pocono. And we weren't sure whether he was with us or not. But I'll tell you something you may not know, because this was a very historic night. I called down from the tower, and I had a little signal with the rescue guys. It was 3, 2, and 1. 3, the guy was okay. 2, not so good. 1, you didn't even want to talk about. And I said, what is it? Somewhere between 1 and 3. That was your dad. I said, wait a minute. It can't be between is. So I was sitting there. So I rushed off and I went down to the hospital. And I got to the hospital. And the whole Allison clan was down there. Now, nobody knows better than you the Allison clan. How squawky they are and how much cane they can raise and how emotional they can get. And they were all down there screaming and hollering. And your grandfather walked in. I knew that he had come back. He said, shut up, as loud as you could make it. He said, everything's going to be all right. Just shut up. This includes all Allisons. And the hospital went quiet, and Dr. Petty was so glad that that your grandfather had come back to life and had exerted Allison control over the crowd, and everybody just shut up and went quiet. And then he said, everybody said, not one word is absolutely breathed out of this. And your grandfather said, Davy's going to be all right. Well, he didn't know any more than the cat got liver whether he's going to be all right or not, but it calmed everybody down. And I said, Mommy, how did you know he's going to be all right? He said, Dr. Petty winked at me. He said, when he winked at me, he said, that meant the concussion. That's all. And I said, well, damn, he should have winked at me first. He said, hell no, he shouldn't have. He said, it was my son. He said, it was your driver. I said, okay, that's good, whatever it takes. And so, that was a great night. And, of course, as you well know, more than anybody, your dad won the race. And I still think it was the best race that was ever run in the history of NASCAR because it was total combat from start to finish. And, you know, nobody was going to give an inch on anything. And he won the race because of that great dive he made down on the inside in the third turn. While Kyle and Earnhardt were wrecking up there, you know, the funny thing about it is after the race was over, I thought Earnhardt would be fuming, and he was laughing. I called him, and I said, are you all right with this? And he says, all right. He said he did the same thing I would have done to him. He said he just got to me first. So I thought that was good. But, listen, we're glad to have you up here in the area, and I know you're living with Bobby and Judy, your grandparents, and that's a great move because I happen to have grandkids my age, and they live with me. And I said to Bobby tonight at lunch, I said, "Has it become a real pain in the butt yet?" He said, "Oh no," he says, "We love it." So, anyway, because I had my grandson, who was 18, spend the day with me the day yesterday, and he got to be a pain in the butt there, about 5 hours after he was there, and I know what it was now. He wanted to leave me and get to see his girlfriend, so I didn't find that out until today. So we're glad to have you up here, and glad you're over there with Donnie. The rest of those... What's that little community live in over there? It's kind of outlaw country. What's the name of it?
Salisbury?
No, it's outside of Salisbury. They call it something else. It's kind of like where the French Foreign Legion would normally live. They ought to call it Allisonville because now that Ronald and Donald and everybody else has got kids, they over there. But at any rate, I'm glad you're over there, and I understand you've already taken some laps in the legacy car. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
How'd you like it?
I am loving it. I love the Legends car, the legacy car. I love all of it.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing tonight. You know, I guess it was one of the first races you ever ran. You were back 7 or 8 years old when you were in the Bandolero car, put Highland Rim, right?
Yes, sir. That's right.
And you had that wreck, and you got your head conked around a little bit.
That's right.
Well, do you know who invented that Bandolero?
I don't.
Me.
Really? So
yeah,
so it's
I invented the Legends car and the Bandolero and the Thunder Roadster. Anyway, I get a call from USA Today that night saying that you had been in a terrible wreck and you had a head injury, and I said, oh, my God. And did I have anything to say about the safety of those cars? Because they were all – they were trying to get something going on kid racing at the time, and I didn't want to jump into that too bad. And I said – the only thing I said to him, I said, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. And the guy's name was Nate Bryan that had called me, and he called me back later, and he said, how do you know he's going to be fine? I said, because Allison's have – an extremely thick head. Their skulls
I couldn't agree more.
One inch thicker than the normal human race. So anyway, we're glad you made it out of that first wreck. But you like
right.
Now, see, I'll tell you something else you probably don't know. This is all coming back to me and also you, but when I first started building the Legends cars, the people that built the first cars for me were Ronald and Donald and Donnie. And we got into a fuss over something. I can't remember what it was. You know how people in racing do. And they went off and started building the cars on their own. And they came up with that legacy car, which when I got it and looked at it, I thought that's a pretty neat little race car. And so I'm glad you're in it, and we're glad to have you up here, and I can't wait to see you. And when do you think your next race is going to be?
I have a race at the Motor Mile this weekend on Saturday.
Where's it going to be?
The Motor Mile is in Langley, Virginia.
Oh, yeah. It's a 4/10 mile track. And,
that's right.
Have you practiced at Hickory?
I have. I tested there, I guess, about a week ago.
Okay. Well, it's very similar to Hickory. And
oh, good. So it'll be a blast then.
Yeah. Well, there's two tracks that were exactly alike, Langley and the old Asheville Motor Speedway, which is now a bicycle racetrack. They don't run cars there anymore. And when Hickory was, you know, a great dirt track at one time, and they paved it, they lengthen it just a teeny bit, and so it's very, very similar to Langley. And so you've got some good practice for Langley, and you experienced the fact that at Hickory, when you ran in down into that first turn and you ducked down to the bottom to get into the low part of two, the car actually held, didn't it? I mean, you got grip down there, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
And so you got back on the throttle. You know where you got back on the throttle there at Hickory. It's about the same place you get back to it on up there at Langley. And so the one thing about the Allisons, I've seen every Allison race since time immemorial, including your grandfather and Donnie. Back in the early days, and your grandfather had that Chevelle. That 60, do you remember that? Did you ever see that 67 Chevelle he had?
That's one of my favorite he ever raced.
That car today, I'm telling you, Robbie, we could bring that car back today. I talked to Bobby about that. We could bring that car back and race it as the nationwide car. It ran so well, and it was so stable, and it was so safe. And there's a guy up in Mooresville right now, and I told your dad about this. I told Larry about this today. There's a guy up in Mooresville named Andy Johnson. He's a old cup fabricator, and he builds a metric chassis car like that. That is absolutely wonderful. It sells for $2,400, and we could race that on a super speedway. That's how strong that is. That's how good the wells are. That's how good the bars are in it. and so forth. So if you get a chance, go over there and look at that car because it's really a need. That might be something to move up to after that legacy car because, you know, you're going to win. You don't get bored running a legacy car. You win so many races, they're going to kick you out of it anyway. Donnie's going to say, hey, listen, boy, I had a good series going here. You started winning all these races. I think you need to move up now because you're ruining the show.
Well,
anyway, I'm just glad to talk to you. I mean, I talk to your mother quite a bit and try to keep her apprised of what's going on down here in, you know, Charlotte as far as raising concern and everything. And she told me about, she said, I've got to do something. She says, I got to do something with him. And I said, yeah. I said, you do. It's kind of like having a, you're out west, okay? And you're Marshall Dillon. And you get quite a reputation. And you have some kids. What are those kids going to do? They got to be a gunfighter, too. And I suspect you're going to be the same way. You're going to be the next gunfighter. So I know you're excited about being up here, right?
I'm incredibly excited. I couldn't be more blessed.
So who do you talk to most? You talk to Brandon a lot, or do you, who else? Where else are you getting some good information from?
I'm getting great information from Larry and Brandon both, and you know Lauren Rainier, who's Harry Rainier's son. He's been kind of guiding me through the right path and where I need to go. With how busy I stay, that's mostly who I'm around other than Bobby and Donnie.
Well, you know, they've been through it, and certainly as much or more than anybody else, they can certainly guide you in the right direction because, you know, nothing's changed. It's all the same. It's still how deep can you go in the corner, how soon you can get back in the throttle. The guy in front of me, he is just a rich kid that don't know where he's going and I'm going to get past him or he's crazy. And the sooner I can get around him, the better. It's the same thing. The same thing as when they were racing. It's going to be the same thing while you're racing. But, you know, I always think there's something. You know, I did a lot of studying. You know, hey guys, listen, I'm not trying to take the show over, okay?
No, I mean, you go ahead. I'm glad
no,
listening
sir.
To you to talk.
But,
no,
you know,
sir. Humpy, you and Robbie, go ahead. We're going to sit in the background. Y'all go ahead.
All right. Well, one thing that when you're back when Bobby and Donnie were racing, I was with Firestone. I wasn't running the Speedway yet. One thing I was very, very interested in, because I'd been a boxer and a football player at University of South Carolina, I was always interested in the physical aspects of driving a race car because it was something I never could do. I tried to, but I got my sports mixed up. I got boxing and racing mixed up. I kept hitting things on the racetrack. And down at Sumter, South Carolina, one night, I started a 16-car pileup, and one car was up on top of me. Man, I was not comfortable at all. I was down there, my roof squashed down. I turned over four or five times before the car got on top of me, and gasoline's leaking on. I mean, it was bad. And I kept hearing this guy up on top of me saying, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. And I thought I'd recognize his voice. But at any rate, I couldn't get out of my car. And finally, this record driver, he comes up, and I look up there through the corner, and there is this guy's got this cigar in his mouth. I, oh, my God, if he drops that cigar, this whole thing's going to blow up. I said, don't you do anything but chew on that cigar. Don't you drop it. I thought he was going to bite that cigar in half. But anyway, he didn't drop it. So I finally got out of the car. Well, the guy that landed on top of me was Cale Yarborough. Oh, Lord. Well, see, now, you understand, when I was 15, 16 years old, I worked out at the Charlotte Airport, and that's where all the racing was. I worked for a guy named Bob Osicki, and that's where he had a drag racing car and all that kind of stuff. He also had the Mad Dog that tried to break the first car to break 180 at Daytona and all that kind of stuff. Well, Holman Moody was right next door, and yakety yak. And Richard Petty and I and your grandfather, Bobby, was working for Keke Haver at the time. We were all teenagers. We all knew each other well. We had no conception of who was going where. Richard Petty had no idea he was going to be a great race driver. I had no idea I was going to end up running speedways. And Cale Yarborough knew he was going to be a racer, but he wasn't quite sure whether he was going to make it or not. He was around there sweeping floors for Holman Moody. So we were all kind of one kind of little rascals, bunch of kids. And anyway, so Cale gets out of the car, and he comes down there, and he looks at me, and he says, "Humpy, one of us needs to retire." So I finally got the message. I thought, well, he's on top of me, I'm on the bottom, and maybe I need to try to run a racetrack instead of run in the track. So that's how that ended up. But any rate, what I did is when I was working for Firestone, your grandfather was racing, and your uncle. And I decided I would try to figure out what physically was the difference between the great race drivers and the average drivers and the tail end drivers. So I took the starting field of the 600 and 43 drivers, and we took 10 of them. And I got this guy named Dr. Hagerman from the University of Miami in Ohio. And he came down here, and he helped me analyze each one of these drivers to try to figure out, is there some common thing among a race driver could measure like you could measure an NFL football player in training camp? And so we went through this thing. We put Holter monitors on them so we could check their heart rates out while they were racing and all this other kind of stuff. And we never could figure out what it was. Then we kind of figured out later, and still today we don't know the answer. But I think what it was, and this came from an intercession with a number of flight surgeons at NASA and the Air Force who had studied combat pilots as well as astronauts, that the greatest thing a race driver had that other fair race drivers don't have and other athletes don't have was the ability to focus over a long period of time. So you get out and you run 40 laps, you can focus on that. You focus on exactly what's happening to you all the time while that car is going around the racetrack. Can't think of anything else. And then you get into a long race, 400, 500 miles, and that's why so many guys that win so many short track races can't make it on the big tracks. They don't have the ability to focus. And I still think today that's probably the answer, although I do think the eyes have a lot to do with it. I think there's probably some. Because I remember back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s, Robbie, when we were going down to Daytona, we didn't have planes. I mean, a few people did. You know, I get up, I remember Curtis Turner getting his airplane and say, "Hey, hand me the map." "We got a map you told me. That map's on the floor. The Gulf map." he had no, he wanted to look at the roadmap on flying an airplane. He didn't have a license. Cale Yarber didn't have a license for a long time. But we drove most places we went. And I know that the really good race drivers I travel with, like your grandfather and Buddy Baker and David Pearson, et cetera, they all couldn't see. I always said one time, I said, Bobby Allen can see an ant going right up to courthouse steps, and I'd never see it. And that was the difference. But now, let's go back to your legacy car. When you were racing it, did you not notice how much you had to concentrate and focus on what was happening to you? Hello?
Yeah, I think Robbie's been dropped out of here.
Okay. We all there?
Are you there?
Hey, Robbie, you still with us?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Hey,
sorry
you
about
there,
that.
Robbie? Hey, Robbie.
I'm here.
Okay. Did you notice how much you had to concentrate on what was happening right in front of you all the time?
Absolutely.
I mean, you couldn't think of that girl you saw the day before.
That's right. One thing my grandfather says to me is that in his lifetime, he's found that racing is the best form of meditation.
Well, he's probably right, because, you know, in addition to that, he was a great flyer. Do you know that in 1 year that he flew more miles than any private pilot in the United States? Did you know that?
I didn't.
He did. And he just, he had that instinct for an airplane. And I always thought that, you know, the good race drivers could always fly well. And they just knew how to do it. Paul Goldsmith, you know what I'm talking about, Paul Goldsmith, Robbie?
Yes, sir.
Paul Goldsmith, I went up to the American Racing Hall of Fame in Novi, Michigan, 4 years ago, where I was privileged to be inducted, and I ran into Paul up there. I've known Paul forever, back when he was running Indy cars, when I was working in Indianapolis. And I said, well, how'd you get up here? He said, I flew. You did? Yeah, I flew my plane. He's 82 years old. He flew his own airplane up there. I thought that was fantastic. And, of course, he was a great Indy driver. He did good with stock cars, but he was a really good Indy driver. So what do you how many races do you think you'll run this year, Robbie?
Well, I know I'm going to run the full season in the legacy car, and we're, you know, as more funding comes into place and we get everything organized, it's looking like it's going to be early fall when we climb into some super late models, and there should be a handful of races there. You know, I've dabbled in some of the Legends cars, and hopefully we'll get a few more races there. So, I mean, it's, you know, this year is looking like it's going to be jam-packed with races.
So, what kind of sponsor are you? Tell me, what kind of sponsor are you looking for with the legacy cars?
Well, we have State Water Heaters on board right now, you know, and they've been amazing, just huge helps and great support. And of course, you know, Impact has they came on really early and were interested in helping out. So that's awesome, but. You know, I mean, right now, as you know, I mean, racing is so much intertwined with how much you have in your pocket and who's willing to help that before we can climb into the late model, we need to find more funding. And so everything else is in place right now financially, but we, you know, I mean, we're keeping our fingers crossed and we keep plugging in and seeing what we can find. But you know, before we can get into a late model, even for a test, we'll have to find somebody else who's willing to help out.
Okay. Well, I got an idea for you, okay? And I'm sure your super brainy advisors, Donnie and Bobby, will tell you this is okay. If you could run some dirt, it would really help you out. Because that's where you learn car control more than any place ever. And both Bobby and Donnie were absolutely fantastic at their dirt control. So my idea is this. There's a track not far from you called the Carolina Speedway over in Gastonia. Well, it's not really in Gastonia. It's nowhere. You got to have a GPS to find it, believe me.
Okay.
Every race fan around on Friday night can find it, is where it was. Matter of fact, it was a track that I helped build 40 years ago and has done quite well, even though I got lost the first night I promoted the damn thing. I couldn't find where my own track was, how far hard it is to get to. But it's four-tenths mile dirt, and it's really old-time red clay. It's kind of like the red clay that you had down long years ago that you don't remember in Birmingham. But anyway, they have a division called a Renegade Division. And it's the metric chassis type late model, and they run a V8 in it, and it is really competitive. And if you can run and win in that, you can run and win anywhere. Okay? So, Robbie, you ready for this? I'm going to pledge to you tonight that I will give you $1,000. All you got to do is put a little teeny humpy on the side of your little legacy car to help you get to the next few races in your legacy races, and which is better than a sharp stick in the eye, okay?
Mr. Humpy, that's amazing. I can't thank you enough.
Well, I just, you know, when your mom called me and she told me you were going to go racing, I thought, man, that's going to be great because, you know, I was at your grandfather's birthday party. When was that? Just a couple of years ago, or maybe last year. When you came down and you and Brandon were talking. And I thought to myself then, that boy needs to be in a race car. And that's what you were thinking then, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, were you not thinking that?
Yes, definitely.
Hey, guys.
Oh, Lord.
Steven,
we aren't talking on TV. We're telling all our secrets.
No, y'all are fine, but I've got a couple
y'all
other people, and And Humpy, can I put you in the screener room with me
before
you've got to get off the air? I've got a question for you I want to ask off the air of you.
All right.
Okay, and Stephen, I'm going to bring on Tina. And Robbie, if you want to stay on, I'm going to bring on Tina Stull. This is I want to make a big announcement. Miss Tina is. She's agreed to come aboard with us on this venture that we're trying to do. She's NHRA drag racing queen, I'm going to say it. And we're going to bring Tina on, if I can find my button. And Miss Tina Stull.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey, Tina, you're in the pit. Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson. How you doing tonight, sweet lady?
I am doing great. Doing great.
Good.
Been enjoying the
good.
Show.
And, I know it. We're trying to get everybody on. The phone lines have lit up, and we want to thank you for agreeing to come aboard the team with us and to talk NHRA. And if you've got the floor, Stephen and Humpy's in the screen room, and we've got Robbie Allison on. Robbie, this is Miss Tina. Tina, if you want to give a little bit of background about yourself and where you're going and what you do, you've got the floor, sweet lady.
Oh, well, goodness. Well, pretty much I'm just a drag racer. I kind of got into it late. I started going to the races when Joe Gibbs owned a team, and my dad was helping him manage it. So just watching him run that team and seeing racing from that perspective just got the bug in me. That the camaraderie that you see on a race team, I just don't think you find in really any other business or, you know, just out there. And so, you know, in my mid-30s, decided I'm going to go race cars and went and got licensed and bought a car. And did it kind of a little bit different. I'm a little envious of you, Robbie, because I didn't know anybody who raced. The only people I knew had always been on the business end of racing. And, you know, my dad was never a mechanic or whatever, so I had to learn everything from, you know, whoever would teach me. But I've been doing it for about 15 years now. And, you know, there's just a thrill about racing. I can sit and listen to, you know, you guys talk about your kind of racing, and it's so similar in a lot of ways. Just the way that the you know, that love of the sport is there. It's, you know, it's probably, you know, you guys probably have a lot more money in your sport than we do in ours, but you couldn't do this kind of job if you didn't absolutely, absolutely love it. Because it's just, one, so competitive, but two, it's hard, and it's not, you know, it's not quite as easy as it looks from the stands.
Definitely.
Yes, you're right, Tina. Yeah, and, you know, I've been a fan of the sport, but, and, you know, I told you, I do watch NHRA, I watch ARCA, I watch Dirt, I watch everything that I can watch, and I'm probably just like Robbie. You know, if they had a wheelbarrow race here at Talladega, Robbie Allison would be in a wheelbarrow race here at Talladega. Am I right, Robbie?
Yes, sir, definitely. A few times.
Yeah. And, Tina, I want to bring on, we got so many people coming, but this is Mr. Curtis, and I don't want to say his last name, and my mind's blank. I think this is Curtis. He's the president of St. Louis Gateway Motorsports Park. Curtis here in the pit stop. Tim Spain and Robert Allison, Tina Stoll, and I don't know, but we got everything going. What's going on, Curtis?
Well, I've just been listening to this, and I'll tell you what, I'm in good company here. After listening to 45 minutes of Humpy, I'm not quite what to say, but I know I got an education, so that was a treat. Enjoyed listening to that.
That was good. And you know, me and Stephen was, you know, just let him and Robbie talk, and, you know, Humpy brought up some stuff about today that Robbie didn't know, and I'm sure Robbie's thankful for that. But, Curtis, you want to talk about anything you've got going on at Gateway Motorsports Park? I know we've had you on before, but you got the floor, my friend.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got our truck race coming up, which is neat for St. Louis, and that's June the 14th under the lights at Gateway. So that'll be the first time we've had a NASCAR race back in St. Louis since 2010, and we're just excited to bring them back to St. Louis. There's great enthusiasm in the community, and, you know, so far there's just been a great experience for us. We're really trying to do the right things for motorsports in the region, and folks are responding, and, you know, I think the race is going to be great. We've got ticket sales are good, it's a great cause. Our title sponsor is the American Lineman Association, and they're trying to bring awareness to electrical linemen as first responders, and certainly honoring the fallen linemen. So we've got a lot of those guys are going to be there. Ameren is our regional energy carrier for Missouri and Illinois, and they're on board. So we're going to have linemen climbing poles and doing all kinds of stuff, demonstrating before the race. This is shaping up to be a great day.
Yeah, and you know, Curtis, when you was on last week or the week before last, I'm a lineman here at my local co-op here at Coosa Valley Electric Co-op, and I want to thank you for, you know, doing what you're doing for the fallen linemen and the linemen that are still here. And if I can, Monday, February the 2nd, the state of Alabama made it the State of Alabama Lineman Appreciation Day, and that's a good thing. And we want to thank you for, you know, everything that you do, Mr. Curtis. And I know there's a lot of people don't know about your background, but if you want to give a little bit about your background, I know that you used to race back in the day, and you might can give some pointers to Robbie.
Well, you know what? I certainly I'm a racer at heart. Mainly, I turned left and right, so I'm not sure how much that'll transfer over. But what Humpy said was that concentration is the key when you start running those long races. It separates the men from the boys, so to speak. So he's giving you good information there, Robbie. But yeah, you know, it's just really been neat for me. I raced Indy Light cars at Gateway years ago, and have a long association with the track. And you know, when I got the opportunity to become involved in 2011, I can't say I jumped at the chance because it's a tough business. But it ultimately worked out, and you know, we're definitely off and running here, and really trying to do some cool things there and expanding, you know, the offerings at the track significantly, from just the oval to, you know, to NHR racing, to off-road truck racing, road racing. We just built a new kartplex, on and on. So, you know, we're trying to change the dynamic of what has to be done in this business these days to make sure that this track's around long after I'm gone. And we're enjoying it. We're working hard and really looking forward to our race coming up on the 14th and having everybody over to our house for a big race and a big party.
Yes, sir. And Curtis, is there going to be TV coverage? I hadn't had time to check. Is it?
Absolutely, yeah. We're live on Fox Sports 1, 7:30 Central Time. So American Ethanol presents the Driving for Linemen 200 brought to you by Ameren. Great group of sponsors here. A lot of folks working with us locally and nationally, and just happy to see the track come back. NASCAR has been great. And so, you know, it's going to be a race that's well received. It's a great time slot on Saturday night for folks to watch some great racing under the lights at Gateway.
That sounds good, Coach. And Stephen Wilson's back, CEO of Speedway Digest. And I was going to save this for later, but I don't think me and Stephen are owners in the network no more. I think it's Miss Anne Marie has 50% stock, and I think Miss Suzanne, my wife, has 50% stock, so we got to watch what we say. But, Stephen, you've got Curtis, and you've got Tina Stoll, and I think Robbie dropped. Yeah, Robbie dropped. But, yeah, Stephen, you got the floor, bud.
Yeah, Curtis, I want to ask you one question based on some of the stuff that you were listening to on Humpy. What, you know, Humpy touched on some of the things that you guys, and not only at the track, but have to do to bring the race fans in, but some of the things on the outside of the track, like with the hotel rooms, getting them to a reasonable rate. What are some of the things up there at Gateway that you guys are doing in the community to make sure that it is affordable for, you know, the fans to come in and watch a race?
You know, I listened closely to what Humpy was saying there, and boy, is he right, because there are so many different places folks can go and spend their entertainment dollar, and he's right again that it is entertainment. And so what we're doing is looking at, you know, from our family standpoint, what can we do? And so for our truck race, we've got the ability for a family of four to come for $100, which is, you know, a great night entertainment. It's a full day with us because we've got the USAC race and then practice qualifying, a concert, and then the truck race. So for $100, bring the family out night before Father's Day, it's a great value. And, you know, when we're doing an offer like that, it's pretty compelling to our hotels around us to understand what we're trying to do, which is build the excitement and really get momentum going for the future. So, you know, we're leading by example with that, and we hope that they follow. We certainly are having discussions about how important it is to keep in mind the economics of a family going out for a weekend to watch a race. So we're getting cooperation, and this is our first big weekend with NASCAR. We have several with NHRA, and I think as they see what we're doing and leading by example, we'll get these guys understanding that you know, you can't raise the rates just because the races are coming to town.
And just kind of, you know, because I don't understand the whole business side of this, unfortunately. You know, when you take a place like Dover, which obviously they're $300 and $400 a night out there, what
and you don't really have to give us any proprietary, but what kind of discussions do you have with some of these hotels to keep them from raising the rates up?
Well, we really can't, other than just use the practical, you know, if you charge too much, you're going to run them off, and we hope that common sense kind of prevails in that, and, you know, some listen better than others. In our market, they're listening simply because they know what it's like to be without a track, and so, you know, sometimes that is, as harsh as that is, sometimes that reality helps, and so we're not really having problems like that, but I suspect that, you know, there's a lot of conversations with tracks and hotels around the country on just that subject.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming back on again tonight, and I hope you guys do good out there next week for your first truck race back on the NASCAR schedule.
Well, great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
That's important. And, Curtis, if you have a few seconds, we have Miss Tina. Well, Curtis dropped. Okay. I was going to let Miss Tina. Stephen, we got to let Tina have the floor because she is she's amazing, and I want to thank her for coming on our show. And we've got Tony B, which he's standing. Yeah, I guess he's just going to stay over there, but she's agreed to come on and do her NHRA weekly, and she's going to think about a segment. But Tina, we've got 13 minutes left, and sorry it took so late. We didn't have time to bring her weatherman on. Everything went super great, but Tina. You got the floor.
You know what? Life is about rolling with the punches, man. You just got to take it. You know, if you plan it all out, it never goes that way anyway.
Yes, ma'am.
That's
yes,
true.
Ma'am. But go ahead, Stephen. Y'all got the floor. I'm texting Robbie.
Now, I'm going to let her roll on with some drag racing information. Tina, unfortunately, I've never much watch drag racing, so I kind of falter in that aspect.
Oh, well, you know, basically go straight, don't turn. Is that too simple? The thing is, I was just listening to the show. I mean, there's so much, you know, that's, you know, we have the same issues that, like, Gateway is getting people through the door, getting people to understand the sport. You know, do you have... You know, we're having, I know over at NHRA, we're having attendance issues. I've been doing this for about 14 years. I've been going to the track. 10 years ago, if you didn't sign up the day that a race opened, if you didn't register that day, there's a good chance you weren't going to get in. In fact, Indy, they used to have a midnight, you know, starting at midnight, you could sign up. We'd sit there and wait for it, so that we could get it registered. I don't think I've seen a national event this year where the quota was full. They're not even drawing in enough drivers to have a full field. And this is after they cut the quotas for the when I was racing in the beginning, we had fields of 220 cars, and that's for Super Comp. 600-800 cars at a race. And so you were talking 4 days, 800 cars. You know, you start to do the math, it's like something like, you know, 4,000 side-by-side passes. Now they're down to about 300 cars at a race. So this economy has just really hurt all of us. But the economics is that, you know, they might have been able to get away with high ticket prices when everybody was doing real well and there was very little competition. But now when there's so much competition for how every dollar is being spent, you know, most of the sports are having to cut back on their prices or they lose that fan base. And the truth is, if you really look at who those diehard fans are, they're not the guy who's, you know, making $100,000 a year. It's the guy who's working his butt off to make ends meet, and to go to a race is going to be something special for him and the family.
Yeah, and you know, Tina,
sorry, Tim.
I'm sorry, Steve. No, I know you got a question, but we got 10 minutes left, and Tony B's been on hold. Can I bring him in here right fast?
Absolutely.
Okay.
He's
I know
anything.
He's been. Oh, I know it. But let's let's get. Wait a minute. I got a button that I always play. If I can find it, I'm gonna go ahead and bring him on and let him sit here and talk. But I got a button that he got mad at me last week. I can't find it. Tony B, you're in the pit stop with T Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson and Miss Tina Stoll. How you doing tonight, my friend? Where's Tony B? Tony B.
I'm blessed to say that I... Hello?
Tony B. You're... We got you live, bud. Watch what you and Suzanne
right
are talking about. Okay.
I'm blessed to...
We've got about nine minutes.
Okay.
I'm trying to find that button. Anyway, y'all go ahead and talk, and I'll find that button and just butt in with y'all.
Oh, well, you find that button, and while you're looking for that button, you might want to look around and figure out how to fix up that Fantasy Racing League, because I got you and Steven both this week. I'm a winner, winner, chicken dinner. How you doing, Tina?
Doing good. Doing good.
Here's my response to that, Tony. Here's my response. Y'all can laugh if you want to, because I know he's in Indiana. He's in Indianapolis, so he can't come down here and get me.
Say hello to my new friend.
I do know my way there.
I know you do. Just carrying on, Tony. And I know, you know, myself and Stephen, we talked. We've had Humphrey and we've had Rob Allison. Everything's carried over. We didn't get to have Tim Campbell, our weatherman, on. But, Tony, we've got 8 minutes left. And Stephen wanted to get everybody on. Me and him's been texting. So we're going to let you and Tina end it out. Y'all got the floor. Y'all can talk drag racing. Y'all can talk open wheel. We'll let y'all get the floor, and I'll let you know when it gets close to cutting off.
Okay, well, Tina, I will tell you one thing about drag racing. 1 year, I got to go to the U.S. Nationals, and I was Tony Schumacher's guest. And let me tell you, he is first class, and they've got great equipment, and I really had a great time doing that. And I think I used to be a police officer, and I wore a bulletproof vest. And I think if you're going to be down by the start line, that's what you need to be wearing, because they will rattle your chest when they take off.
Oh, yeah.
I was
going to ask you, what did you think of standing between those two cars when they left the line? I mean,
I didn't know my front of my chest, my sternum, could touch my spine. But when them rattled and thundered off, it compressed me quite a bit. And I was very impressed. And, you know, growing up, I had never been to anything but a bracket race. And that was cars that, you know, we drove on the roads. So I was very impressed. And it is an awesome sport. And I love it, and I would go to every one that I could, and my biggest goal right now is with the NHRA, the UHRA, every sanctioning body out there. I want to get those drivers wearing the brace yourself head and neck device for their safety, and everybody's going to be better from it.
Yeah, well, safety, I tell you, safety equipment is very important because, you know, as you know with NASCAR, I mean, when things go wrong, they go really wrong. You don't kind of have a, you know, you can have a bad lap, but when you don't have a bad, you know, there's just one kind of wreck, and it's usually horrific.
Absolutely.
And when they did some testing after the Eric Medlin thing, they were saying the amount of G-force that that car was shaking and rattling was something like, I mean, in the thousands of G. I mean, it was just absolutely insane the amount of G-force that could be produced, especially when those things start flipping. And you know, it's pretty intense. I am always shocked at how funny car drivers survive the implosion. You know, when those bodies are down so tight. You know, this year they tried to put those extra straps to hold the body on. And
right. Where
does the concussion go?
Exactly.
You know, it's like putting off a bomb in a safe. I mean, you know, granted, they have kept all the debris inside the car, but you got a driver in there. And you need to
have
the cars are set so that they, if they crash, they break apart in certain areas to protect the driver.
Exactly.
So these, you know, having those safety devices and people constantly improving on them, you know, we used to think the neck roll did something. You know, all it does is keep your neck clean.
Exactly.
You know. So.
Well, what's coming up in drag racing?
Well, they're going to continue on the national schedule. For me, I am limited by, you know, sponsorship, the distance I can travel. Right now with the gas prices, the biggest, you know, the biggest overhead cost right now is just getting to the darn race. So pretty much at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, they're kind of closer to where I'm at, you know, Texas and, you know, the Florida. It kind of goes along the bottom of the country. And up through, you know, the high summer, they're up in Michigan. And then back in the fall, they're back down here. So probably I'm done with most of my national racing. I'll do some divisionals here over the summer and then pick back up when they get a little closer to home.
Well, if you're not too busy Saturday, you might want to check out the Verizon IndyCar League racing at the Texas Motor Speedway Saturday night. And I'm just telling you now, look out for Scott Dixon and Team Ganassi because they will be doing good.
I will. I'll catch them if I can. They're, I'm down in San Antonio, so that's still about 8 hours away from me.
Oh, but, well, that's nothing on a little two-seater Cessna. You can get her done.
There you go. Can I borrow yours?
I think mine's going to be out of town.
Oh, come on. You don't have to have a license or anything, do you?
Well, I believe I heard Tim say earlier that Cale Yarborough didn't have a license for a while, so why do we need one?
Well, heck, I have flown before. I flew a Falcon fighter jet with the Randolph Air Force Base. Now, the only problem is I didn't have to land it or take off, but other than that, I'm good.
Well, yeah, I was going to say I've flown myself too, but I didn't take off or land. And, you know, from what I've been told, it's all in the landing.
Which is, I've also heard it called a controlled crash.
Yeah, I fly too, but I fly Southwest of Delta.
Oh, okay.
I didn't mean to butt in, y'all. Tony and Tina, Stephen, we got a little over 2 minutes left. Is anything, Stephen, would you like to talk to Tina or Tony and talk about anything? You got the floor, bud.
Yeah, I just had one real quick question on drag racing. Do you think that the lack of coverage from ESPN and not always being live kind of hurts the sport, considering that they can't always produce it live as it's happening?
Absolutely. I think right now the television coverage is absolutely horrific. It totally is killing. I mean, definitely, it's having an effect. It's kind of like one of those things where, you know, they thought they could save money, I think, by cutting back on the coverage, and then their crowd started cutting back, and so they cut back. You know, it's like, you know, not the place that they should have taken the money from. Because, you know, the way that they have it set up, and I bitch a lot about this on Twitter, but the way they have it set up right now, you know, it's not watching live racing. It's watching a recap. And I ask, even like with the Super Bowl, who wants to watch it in a recap form 4 hours after the Super Bowl's over? I mean, that's kind of that whole idea of that, you know, sitting up in the stands and rooting for your racer and watching them and hoping they're going to pick, you know, I mean, it's part of being along with the sport. And, you know, it can't be recapped because it's not, you know, once you know who wins, why are you going to watch? It's that anticipation,
yeah, right,
that something's going to happen. Yeah, I mean, so you either do it all out or don't do it. If you can't do it right, don't do it. And they're, you know, I just found out you can watch most of the stuff live via these smaller things. So I just go sit on my computer. I'm going to watch it live. You know, I'm not going to sit back and you know, pretend like it's not happening so that I can watch it at 12 o'clock at night. And it's also, you know, constantly being preempted by, you know, girls volleyball or college football. I mean, it's not even treated as though it's even a priority at all. And I really blame ESPN on that measure, because they don't know what
I
they
do
have.
Too, Tina. I do too, Tina. And you know, me, we've got 10 seconds, and I'm at, you know, ESPN. What we're getting, Stephen? Thank you, Tina. We'll get you back on good, and Tony next week. We'll get you back on good. We're fixing to go off there. I think they just dropped it. Tina, thank you very much for coming on. Stephen, thank you very much. And Tony B, say hello to my little friend. And I got one. If y'all want to listen to this, here we go. One little.
That's all, folks.
Thank y'all. We'll talk to y'all next week. Y'all have a good night.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.